This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to Wells Tech, a show about technology and ministry and where those two meet. This is episode 458, recorded on Tuesday, August 16th, 2016. So happy that you joined us. And I'm also so happy that Sally Draper joined me as usual. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I'm great today, Martin. Thanks for the great intro, as usual. You always lead things off on a very positive step. Thanks for that.
It's not that hard. It's about the same, yeah, kind of just variations of the same. It's kind of like eating at Taco Bell. Every meal is kind of the same thing, but just with a different name, a different constitution. But it's the same ingredients. So,
yeah.
But it's true, the show is about technology and ministry. Our job each and every week is to figure out how that can benefit our listeners and our viewers. So hopefully we've been able to do that, especially over this past summer where we take a little lighter tack and provide maybe just kind of a singular focus and whatever. But I heard you had a big weekend before we jump into our topic.
Oh, we did. We had lots of fun around the Draper family circles. My mother and father-in-law celebrated a 50th anniversary, and you know, I just can't do anything these days without doing a breakout. So we presented them with a lot of fun activities, including a couple of locked up boxes where they had to figure out clues and get the boxes unlocked to get to their presents and things. And it was just loads of fun. They had a really good time. And then after all that we moved my middle son off to college, so mom's nest is a little bit lighter these days, and yes. we're going to depend on technology to keep us connected. So good thing we have Google Hangouts.
Very cool. I'm assuming he has the appropriate technology along with him to be a successful freshman.
He does. He took along a really nice computer as well as a Chromebook. He's really into his Chromebook these days. He got one of those nice Asus flips, which can be a tablet or a Chromebook, stand-up, touchscreen. Really nice. And he's just counting down the days till the Android apps are available on it. So I need to check into that and see when that's all supposed to be live. But I know that's a big thing. That
North Dakota State, is that right?
Sorry, no, that would be fighting words. It's University of North
Dakota. UND.
UND, studying electrical engineering. So.
All right, and I assume that one of the requirements is that they have a computing device at their disposal, correct? That they bring that along or not?
Yeah, you know, mom wouldn't know those things because schools just communicate with students. They don't tell parents a whole lot. So I don't know if he got
not
that
like
as a requirement.
Anymore, is
yeah,
it?
I did have to buy the school supplies. But one techie thing that he got was he got a job on campus at the tech help desk.
Awesome.
And so, yeah, we actually had to take him up a little bit early so he could get some training because I think they'll have kind of an onslaught when everyone else arrives this weekend. So,
isn't your oldest in a similar job at MLC?
He is. He just stopped by the office today and got caught up on what's happened this summer. So, yeah, a couple of little techies out there in the college world.
Cool. You trained them well.
Well, we'll see.
You trained them well. So we probably should get to the topic of the day. We introduced it a little bit last week when we talked about digital publishing and our tool of choice over the past year as we were writing our book, With All Your Heart. We picked Sway as kind of that tool. Maybe sometimes a square peg into a round hole or vice versa. It wasn't the perfect fit, but I think we made it work, and I think people enjoyed it and the ability to view it on different devices, and you know, we had fun learning it as well. The fun has not stopped, though, because we're taking that digital content and pushing it into good old paper format. We're trying to create a paper book, go through the publishing process with digital tools yet online, but the end product, at least one of the end products, we hope, will be a physical book with a cover and page numbers, and you turn the pages from left to right, and there are words on and images, perhaps, on the pages. So we thought that it might be good this week to spend a little bit of time explaining part of that journey, what that's been like, at least with the tool that we're using. And there are a bunch of tools out there that you could choose from. We chose probably the one that is maybe most well known, I'd maybe guess, as far as getting your book into print. And this is kind of that on-demand world where you're not ordering or have to order, 10,000 copies, and have them all shipped to you and then you distribute them. This is through Amazon. It's a subsidiary of Amazon is what I've discerned. And it's called CreateSpace. And my guess is that they probably bought this from somebody, or purchased a company, then brought it under the umbrella to get more content into Amazon.
You know, Martin, just to get philosophical on you for a minute, the whole series is about self-publishing, and we've already done that. Like you said, we published online using Microsoft Sway, and now we're getting ready to publish a print book. It's just kind of rang a bell with me back to a book that we read many years ago now on the podcast called The Hidden Value of Electronic Media by Shane Hipps. And I remember, and actually if you followed the podcast, it's been kind of an ongoing debate between Martin and I, the difference between digital media and print media. I remember Shane talking about in his book that shift away from the top-down publication where, you and I would have had to present our book to various publishers and ask them if they would please print it. And now we have that power using CreateSpace. We don't have to go to anybody for permission to permit to print a book. We can use these online tools for free and create our own book and get it published on Amazon. I know Pastor Rob Gunther's done this, and he actually bought copies and got his local bookstore to stock them so that his book was for sale in a local bookstore. And there was no publishers and editors involved in the process. It's basically a homegrown process. Maybe I'm missing a little bit of having an editor in the process.
I'm there with you on that one.
We're relying on our own editing skills, and we hope that those will be pleasing to our readers.
Whatever, wear, I think, the editor hat, but we do the True. Best we can. But I think we learned a lot in the writing. I certainly learned a lot in the writing process, that it's certainly not easy to write a book, even the small book that we wrote, the editorial process. I think maybe one of the mistakes we made in the writing process was assign a deadline, and maybe that was not one of the mistakes, but one of the reasons it got done, where each month we had a week where we talked about a particular chapter. So over the course of 9, 10, 11 months, we got the thing written. But I think that deadline maybe drove us more than the passion to kind of get something out of our heads and onto paper. And now I think we're going to be able to go back and take kind of a broad look, and maybe not just through this process, but over time as we put out another edition or whatever, because it is kind of a timely book. It talks about tools, online project management tools that are available today but may not be the best tools tomorrow. So I guess I have in mind to keep this up to date. And the only way you'd really be able to do that is to go through the self-publishing process, where it's an on-demand thing, where it's not going to cost you an arm and a leg to put out a second or third edition to keep this thing up to date. So
yeah, so lots of pluses here. And I guess to me, just an amazing shift that we're seeing, that we're living out through the publication of this book. Obviously, Pastor Gunther's already done it, and I'm sure many of our listeners have explored these areas as well, but it is definitely something we need to take note of, along the lines of Martin Luther being able to distribute it because of the printing press. Now we have these open channels to publish print publications, and it's different.
So today, we're going to kind of do this in two parts, this week and next week. We're going to cover kind of the construction part this week, how we put it together, got it into the tool, some of the options that we had, etc. But then also next week, kind of transition into the distribution part. Now that you've got it in print, how do you get it in the hands of people? So maybe we should start with just the tools that we used, you and I used, to write the book in the first place. We ultimately distributed it in Sway. We could have used WordPress or any other kind of tool that we wanted, just a plain old website, but we chose Sway. But we didn't write it in Sway. We used a more traditional capture device, so to speak, and a word publisher, word processing tool, and we used just Microsoft Word. And some of the tools that are available today that make collaborating on a book a lot easier are the online tools through OneDrive or Office 365, which we've talked about in the past, where the document itself, the Word document, doesn't exist just on my machine or your machine, but it exists on a server and can sync back and forth. You know, so when I make a change or an edit, you can see that edit and vice versa. We turned on track changes so we knew what the other changed or what the other suggestion was. And if you've never used track changes, it's really a must in an environment where you're trying to collaborate on a book so that you can process from beginning to end all the things that might be up for grabs. So grammar changes, spelling changes, maybe even insertions of all new content, so that when I maybe added a section or you added a section, I knew exactly where that was or you knew exactly where that was and could go right there rather than kind of figure out, you know, where in the book that was added. One thing that we did do, which I think we did it, I'm not sure why we did it, but this is the way we did it. We had one Word document for each chapter. So it was easy just to keep the file size down, although I don't think that would be a super concern. But that was one thing we had to do now that we're going to publish it, is bring it all together into one big document.
Mm-hmm. And I guess one other thing that I would mention that we're going to have to do a little differently now with the Word document is we originally formatted it in 8.5 by 11, which is the default format for Word documents, but ultimately we want our book to be 6 by 9. So now we're having to change some layout decisions that we made based on an 8.5 by 11 layout to fit a 6 by 9 layout. So I guess we could have started with the 6 by 9 and saved ourselves that step. We just weren't knowledgeable enough on the front end of things to realize that.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about the tool. That's kind of the back end. And you can, I think you could probably use any word processing tool you want. What the tool requires, the CreateSpace tool requires, is either a Word doc or a PDF. So any processing tool that can export into PDF is going to work just fine. And I tried it both ways, and both ways work, though. Depends on what your preference is. So for those of you watching at home, I'm just going to pull up the tool at this point, and it is called CreateSpace, and you can go to createspace.com. And createspace.com, I believe, is nicely laid out. It assumes really nothing. It assumes that you really don't have any publishing experience whatsoever, which I don't, which we don't. Never written or produced a book, a print book before. So they really give you lots of instructions right from the get-go, where, you know, it's easy to find how to start, and they also offer a bunch of paid services. So if you don't want to go through the editing process, or if you don't want to lay out your cover, if you don't want to even lay out the interior, you can send your stuff, pay them to do it. Now, the prices may not fit your budget, but you do have that option depending on whether you think you've got the next great American novel or not. It depends on what your agenda is. But it's really easy to kind of work through the system. So you just create an account, you log in, and at that point you are basically into the tool. And so you can create as many what they call projects as you want. Some of the things that you have to be concerned with when you create it, obviously, are what you're going to name the book. Is there a subtitle? Who the authors are? Is it part of a series? Does it have an edition number? Obviously, what language it's in. But then you get into some things that maybe you aren't thinking about as somebody who hasn't maybe published something, and that's you need an ISBN number. And there are a couple of ways, apparently, to get that. You can go through kind of a central service that produces ISBN numbers, or what's really nice is just with a couple clicks, CreateSpace can just grab one for you. And we weren't concerned with kind of crafting our own, so we just took what they gave us. No charge to create an ISBN number. It's the one that they give you, and you can just paste that right on the book, and away you go. So it's actually a very easy process. A couple other things that you then have to determine are what size. Sal, you mentioned we pick 6x9, but there are other formats that you can pick. They recommend 6x9, and apparently that's a pretty standard format, and I think it fits pretty well for the number of pages we think we'll have. I don't know how many pages the Word doc is of the, you know, the book itself on 8.5x11, but in 6x9 format, I think we're estimating 130, 135 pages, something like that. So it might depend on how long your publication is, which format you choose, but you do have the option to pick a lot of different sizes. It can be anywhere from 5.5 to 8.5, which is just basically a letter size
kind of paperback
piece of paper
book.
Folded in half. You can go all the way up to 8.5x11. They've got all kinds of different formats, and I think you can even kind of create your own custom size. Once you pick that, then you can pick interior types, and in at least in this product, they say you can pick black and white or full color. Obviously, black and white's going to be cheaper, you know, than full color, but we have some nice images in ours, so we picked full color. And then you can pick your paper color, and all of these you can order samples of, so you can get CreateSpace to send these samples to you, so you can kind of touch them, feel them, and then determine which one it is that you want. Right now, and we're not totally through the process, we picked full color and white at this point. And then came the contents itself, where you upload your book file. And it says that you can upload your work in a print-ready PDF, doc, DOCX, or RTF file. I found that to be very simple. It picked up right away. One thing you have to be concerned with if you're uploading a DOCX or DOC file is to make sure you embed your fonts because they may not have the same fonts that you use. And there is a way I've found now through this process where you can embed fonts in Word docs, which is actually pretty handy. Because sometimes you and I probably both receive Word docs that, you know, where the word processor has to kind of guess or do a substitute font, and it may not look exactly like the way the author intended, but there is a way to embed fonts, both just embed fonts, the entire font set, or just the characters that you use, so it becomes a little bit smaller file size. So that was a pretty easy process, by and large.
So you're going with the DOCX versus the PDF,
yep,
is what I'm hearing.
And I was surprised. I was going to kind of go into InDesign and do some fancy stuff, but Word's come a long way now, and you can do some pretty good positioning, word wrapping, text flow around images right within Word. It didn't always used to be like that. You had to use text boxes and spacing and all that, but with the latest versions of Word, I think you can lay out a pretty pleasing a pretty pleasing document, and it sucks it right in. It examines it and makes sure that you don't have any errors, and gives you a chance to go from there. So let me see if I can actually show. If I hit save here, I'm on the what they call the interior tab. Once it's in, it does an examination and then lets you view a rendering of it, you know, with the page turn and everything else, which is really helpful because then you can see where your page breaks are happening because it will paginate everything. So your chapter the beginning chapter page would appear either on the left or the right, and I still have to kind of figure out what the industry standard is. And some of these things that you never have to think about before, or never had to think about before. So does a chapter in a book start on the left page, or does it start on the right page? And you want to be consistent, and you kind of have to add spacing into your Word doc to make sure that that's going to come out the way you want it. So while I'm waiting for this to do a print check, because I'm going through the process just as a demonstration, you also then can create your cover. And one of the things that I really liked about CreateSpace was a cover creation tool where you can go in, pick a template, fill in some templated text, and the layout just happens all by itself. So I tried a few of those and then finally decided, well, I'm going to do my own just in Photoshop, but you could do it in any tool you want. You could even probably use PicMonkey as long as you could figure out you know, the page size, and they give you a little wizard that you can say, well, it's 130 pages and it's 6x9. Therefore, they'll give you a little PDF template where it'll say, here's the spine, make sure you don't go over the edges, and kind of walks you through the entire process, so it's very hard to screw it up. So I'm back to the, if you're watching, there is an interior reviewer, which is actually very cool. So you can actually see how the book would render, and it does the page turn and everything else for you. You see your table of contents and how the images are going to look, how the text wraps and flows in. And then it gives you little flags where it finds problems. So initially when I uploaded this, it found that font substitution problem. It'll tell you if you've got text encroaching on the edges or the binding of the book and say, hey, maybe you want to fix that. And then you go fix it and then you just upload another file. So it's actually very, very slick interface. And you can get a very good idea of what your book is going to look like before you actually have to submit it for printing. So you're going to have a good comfort level that, hey, I'm liking the way this is going, and you have a lot of controls at your disposal to get this looking right. So actually very, I think, very easy to use, and so far I'm very impressed with the process. Now, we haven't actually printed anything, so that could be an issue as we go forward, but I think in general they walk you through things pretty well.
Yeah, I was just going to comment that there's a lot of help. You're not necessarily clicking and showing that all on the screen, but we've done our reading on a lot of different help documents and how to optimize your PDF or Word docs and things like that. They provide a lot of great information to support it. I see links on the screen to watch a video about this or that, you know, so there's all kinds of help provided along the way.
One of the things that they also provide is a kind of a configurator, and I don't have it up here on the screen, but you can kind of figure out what the cost of your book is going to be. So if you pick black and white, or if you pick color, you plug in the number of pages it's going to be, whether it's got a bleed, so you've got images that kind of go to the edge of the page, or whether they're confined into margins. You click a button, and ultimately it'll pop out a number that'll say, hey, it's going to cost you $2.50 per copy if you do black and white in a 6x9 that's 130 pages. I think when we did this together last week, Sally, it was for the color version of a 130-page book at the 6x9 format, it was about $9.25 or something like that. And then you add a little bit of shipping on top of that. That's if you buy your own book. Now, in the distribution process, you can mark that up if you want to cover, you know, some more costs or make a little money. You can do it that way as well, but to buy your own book and stock it or give it away or whatever it is. And as I recall, Rob Gunther gave his book away at the Wells Tech conference. He gave out coupons as prizes, and wasn't that Rob who did that?
It was, but I think that might have been to his Audible book, which is another process you can go through.
It wasn't to a printed book, it was an Audible book, which is a whole different a whole different cool segment of this show that we haven't gotten to, but I think ultimately we'll go through that process as well.
So, good stuff. Looks like it's fun to be a publisher.
I'm having fun with it. I'm excited to see how it actually turns out. You know, something that you spend a lot of hours on can be a physical product. At least to have one copy around might not be a bad idea, just to say, hey, I wrote a book. It has my name or our name on it, and it amounted to something tangible. So, interesting process.
So, next week we'll probably go a little bit further, and once we've completed the process, what it's like to sell it and things like that.
Yep, I think that's kind of the intent of us actually going through down this road. I don't imagine that we're going to sell a ton of copies per se, but to go through the experience, because I think there are opportunities, there are reasons why our listeners across the Synod might want to get involved in some kind of publishing. You know, Rob is a good example. He did a collection of sermons, I think, he put together. But I think there are other reasons why you may want to consider getting your book into into print. I can think of maybe a series of devotions, a journal that you write for teachers. Many of our teachers have subject matter expertise where they could put that together in a collection, lessons or lesson plans. I even thought that because this is fairly inexpensive and fairly easy to do, a teacher might want to take advantage of the service to kind of bring together student creations. So student mm-hmm. novels, short stories, maybe art, you know, lots of different things that you could put together in, you know, in this kind of format. Because you're really, I don't think you're paying a lot more than what you'd pay, and you get a much more professional product, is my suspicion, than if you just kind of put this together with, you know, a photocopier and, you know, a spiral bound, you know, whatever. It'd be kind of nice to have a bound book or a, you know, book with a nice cover. So we'll see.
Absolutely. Good ideas.
Let's move on, Sally, to a segment of the show we call our Picks of the Week. What do you got?
I am happy to talk today about the Wells Tech, actually the Worship Office lectionary on Google Calendar. We just help them along by putting it on the Google Calendar. But each church year, some talented people on the worship committee put together the lectionary notes, like the lessons and psalm of the day, the prayer of the day, the verse of the day, the hymn of the day, the church year color, all of those things for the particular worship services. They put it together in a calendar format, share that with us, and we update a Google Calendar. We have a page out on our Wells Tech Wiki that explains it all and has a link to the calendar, tells you how to add the calendar to your own, and how you can work with it and things like that. And that's out on the Wells Tech Wiki. We'll have a note, some notes about it in our show notes that come out with this podcast. But those of you that are familiar with the church year know that it ends right around Thanksgiving time. We go through end times following the Reformation. The month of October and November is all about the end times, and then we start over again when Advent starts in December or sometimes late November. And so we're coming up on that time period where the lectionary calendar is going to be out of date, and now we have a new lectionary calendar in place. So beginning with December 2016, there's Advent 1 available to you. That would be Church Year A that is now available in the lectionary calendar. But I am happy to say it's not just Church Year A that's out here. You can keep going all the way to the next church year, December of 2017, and Church Year B has been added to the lectionary calendar, and even Church Year C beginning in December 2018 this year. So we have the lectionary calendar now updated all the way through November of 2019. And like I said, you can click on each event, you can get more details. It has things like, and it's kind of slow to load, a description of the Sunday, the lessons, the supplementary lectionary, if there are supplemental lessons, the prayer of the day, the verse of the day, the hymn of the day, and the church year color for the day. All of that in Google Calendar format. So if you're a Google Calendar fan, you can head over to the link and just click on the Google Calendar down in the lower right hand corner, and that will allow you to add it to your own personal Google Calendar. And you can also share it on a church calendar if you have that embedded on your website, or in lots of different ways. You may want to recommend that your organist, for instance, subscribe to it so they can know hymn of the day and different things, you know, theme type things that are associated with the church year as they pick organ music. And there may be others who change the paraments or whatever it is that would benefit from seeing the calendar as well. So just excited that as of today, we have the new church year calendar and the two following years as well. So you guys are all set through November 2019.
Great, great pick. I think if you're not familiar with how Google Calendar works, even though you're kind of adding this to your own calendar, it really remains separate. So it's kind of like a view or a kind of a separated piece of content that you can turn on and off. So you can say, hey, show me my calendar, but also show this lectionary calendar mixed with it, which is really a powerful way, one of the most powerful reasons to use Google Calendar. especially if you're a church or a school, you can mix and match a lot of different calendars, get a lot of different views. This would be maybe one that you'd bring into a worship planning calendar that maybe you share with instrumentalists and whatever, where you've got the content right there. One thing I wish they would do, I was noticing as you pulled that up, is that they don't provide links to anything in there. I think you can. So if you have a Bible reading, you could link out to Bible Gateway or Bible.com content there. It would be pretty easy to do and be a nice addition. But it's really nice to have that handy. And if there are other things that get added over the years, you really don't have to do anything. You just have to, you know, keep subscribed to the calendar and you've got it. Mm-hmm. You've got it right there. So, and works great on mobile devices. So if you are into worship planning or responsible for that, not a bad thing to have at your disposal.
Yeah. Very occasionally we'll get someone that tells us something about the verse might be wrong or something. Rachel Pearson actually just tweeted to us not long ago that it said 1 Timothy and it should have been 2 Timothy, whatever verse was cited. And so if you do come across errors like that, I'm happy to get those corrected. If you just email Wells Tech, we'll make that change. And then that, again, just flows out to everyone that's using the calendar. You don't have to do anything special to get those updates.
Through the magic of technology.
Magic of Google.
Yeah. All right. My pick is something that you've probably heard about in the news lately or maybe even experienced yourself, and that is the fact that Windows 10, which has been out for about a year now, has updated itself. I called it the anniversary update. So again, it's been about a year, and a couple reasons why I would recommend upgrading. One is it's got better security, and they've kind of hardened some parts of the system as well as ironed out some of the bugs. So it's a pretty big update, so it's something that you I would highly recommend that you look at. But the biggest reason I think it's worth the update is the inclusion of some new features within the built-in browser, which is called Microsoft Edge. I like Edge, and I've talked about Edge in the past. A couple things that it's had for a while is on-screen annotation. So this plays well with any touch devices like Microsoft Surface or whatever. But a couple nice or one big addition is the addition of extensions. So up until this point, it didn't have the ability to do any kind of extensions like Chrome has, for instance. And they don't have a lot of them, but the couple of the big ones that I really like that were kind of holding me back from using the browser, which is, I believe, a lot faster, cleaner, more reliable than even Chrome or Firefox or Safari, is LastPass, which is kind of a must-have for me. The ability to store my passwords and extract them where I need them on different web pages, and a decent ad blocker. I use AdBlock Plus, which we've talked about on the show as well. So extensions are now available. If you go to their extensions store, they kind of integrate them right into the Windows store. You can see all the ones that are available. Another one that I use a lot is the OneNote Web Clipper, so that you can grab content and plug that right into your OneNote. One that you might be interested in, Sally, is the Pinterest save button. That's a third. I don't know if these are in prioritized order, but they might be. Pinterest is number three on the list. They have a translator. They have Amazon Assistant, Evernote Web Clipper, Office Online, Pocket, Save to Pocket. Not a huge list of extensions at this point, but it's growing. But the ones that are most important to me are on here and really make the browser much more viable and usable. So that's a big reason I believe that Windows 10 Anniversary Edition is worth the upgrade, the stability, the greater security, but also the Edge browser and some of the extensions that they've added to it that make it something that could be used on a pretty regular basis. And I don't know if it's just me, but I think the presentation, the display, the rendering of the content just looks sharper and crisper and cleaner, a little bit faster than some of the other browsers, and that makes it a little bit easier to read and navigate, and it's a little bit more enjoyable experience. So it doesn't have all the extensions. You know, Chrome is kind of at the top of the list, as it's got every extension known to man, and you can have, I don't know how many extensions you have, Sally, but I got 11 or 12 of them here. A lot of them I don't use, but some of them are pretty key and very handy, and Chrome has kind of invited that Chrome extension ecosystem to grow. It'll be a while probably till Windows Edge gets, you know, that full-featured, but give it a try. I think it might be a good fit, especially if you're into Microsoft products, use Office 365 like we do. It's probably worth a try and see how it performs. Have you tried it?
I have Edge installed. I have not installed the Anniversary Edition to get these updates. And I'm wondering, is the Anniversary update free?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So I was a very late comer to Windows 10 on my home computer. So honestly, end of July was when I got Windows 10 upgrade, second half of July, right before the cutoff. And so now you're telling me I need to go and get another major update.
Well, it should come automatically through your regular software update cycle.
Okay.
But just be prepared. Okay. It'll take probably 45 minutes to an hour to go through that process. So
okay.
Before you click install, just know that your computer will be out of commission for that period of time. So
makes sense. Thanks for the update.
But it's a good update. It's a good update. I wouldn't hesitate to move forward with it. And like I've said in the past, I think Windows 10, there's really not a reason not to move to Windows 10. They've made some nice improvements. The user interface, a little different, but I would say not so different that you're going to struggle with it. I installed it on my mom's computer. That's kind of the true test for me. Over the summer, maybe even a little bit before, and she's been able to pick up on things, and it's still got the taskbar and the start button. Looks a little bit different, but other than that, she's been fine with it. So.
Awesome.
We do have some community feedback this week, don't we, Sally?
We do. A few things to note. First up, some email we received from Michael Vliger, who's a teacher and tech coordinator at Risen Savior in Milwaukee, and he sent us two different things. The first comment kind of harkens back to our security series that we did during the month of July and recommending LastPass, as you were just talking about in that pick of the week there, Martin. He said he was listening to episode 571 of the podcast Security Now, and they discussed a potential security problem in version 4 of Firefox add-ons. So LastPass potentially has a security problem with the Firefox extension. So if you're using that, you should update your extension to fix that flaw. So good to know for our Firefox users that are listening. Michael also wrote to us, and there is a link to an article, a blog post from LastPass about that, so we'll include that in the show notes. He also wrote to us and pointed us to air.bar, which is a tool that will convert your non-touchscreen computer to a touchscreen computer. It looks pretty interesting. People are able to pinch, zoom, swipe, tap, do it all with Air Bar. It says you can use regular Windows gestures, you can touch without a touch screen. It's plug and touch, attaches with a magnetic strip and plugs into the USB port, and it works with anything, fingers, gloves, brush, or whatever you touch your screen with, it works. So they have different sizes. It looks like for 11.6, 13.3, 14, and 15.6 inch screens, and the price is $69 for a pre-order. So check it out if you've been longing for a touchscreen computer. It may not be far away with the Air Bar. So thanks for that, Michael.
Sal, you have a touchscreen on your computer, don't you?
I do. I don't really remember that I do because I never touch
That's
it.
That's what I was going to ask. do you really use it?
Yeah. Do you touch your screen?
Well, I have a Surface, and the keyboard does come off, but I would say 90% of the time it's probably got the keyboard attached, and I'm you know, inputting and navigating using the touchpad, which is a lot better on this version than it had been in the past. I would say on occasion, if I'm maybe on the couch or whatever and I don't have the keyboard attached, I'll use it, but not a lot. And it has a pen as well, which if I were an artist, I think I would use that more, but I'm not. I would think that maybe the best use case for computing like this would be obviously for artists, but I think there would be maybe even some teachers who might use this as a maybe something that you'd walk around the classroom with, so rather than have to be kind of chained to a desk or a podium and, you know, with the keyboard or whatever, take it around, and especially if you have a wireless connection, and use the touchpad a little bit more. I think my wife would be interested in that. She's an art teacher, but I think she'd have other uses for that as well. So,
I think your mileage may vary, and there's probably a wide range of users out there. I have an iPad, and I take my iPad to church with me and make notes on it during the service. That's just been my habit for many years now, actually. And so I don't think of my computer in the same league as my iPad, you know. And
different
I just
purposes, different use cases.
Exactly.
Yeah. And your iPad but does what it does, and your computer does what it does.
Right? Everybody's different, so. Yeah. All right. We're going to move on to a few links that were shared via Digo. The first is to an article from Proclaim, which is a projection software and collaboration software that churches can use to do projection during the service and things. And Jason Winjet actually tagged this article on Digo, and the article is titled Church Volunteer Recruitment, 13 Tips to Grow Your Volunteer Program. This actually fits nicely with our book, Martin, With All Your Heart. Because we talked about recruiting volunteers and treating them nicely and helping them smoothly transition into their volunteer responsibilities. Jason's comment says, a good post on getting volunteers involved. Some good points like telling people why the tasks are important, so helping them to buy into it, and then giving them a chance to try it out before they commit. We do this with our AV team, he says, asking people just to come by on Sunday to the back of church and watch what happens and ask questions. So this might spark some ideas for you as well. So definitely check out the article. And, you know, you might want to page back to that volunteer chapter in the With All Your Heart book as well.
Awesome. Yep.
Next up, another article from Jason, this time from the Faithlight blog. They're the people behind Logos and the YouVersion Bible as well, I believe. Right, Martin? Am I off on that? Not your version.
Logos Bible, right.
Logos Bible, sure. Okay, and this is titled How to Create Your Own Digital Church Bulletins. So they actually walk through a process for creating a digital church bulletin. Jason says he hasn't tested it yet, but it seems like a great feature. Looks like it's a free and paid service levels. He said he was skeptical of different pricing, but he has found value, and the more they use it, the more they find value. So this might be something that, and perhaps this integrates with Proclaim as well. So the article's from Faith Life, but it also integrates with Proclaim. So maybe that's their product too. I'm getting it all confused now.
That's okay. so this digital bulletin concept is not the creation of a paper, so it's not a desktop publishing concept. It truly is a digital bulletin where you would instruct your worshipers, you know, people coming on Sunday or maybe even during the week, I suppose, to a bulletin that would provide, you know, worship materials or news and information, that kind of stuff. So kind of like almost a weekly worship webpage.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your impression?
Right, and they say you can add different sections to tell people about upcoming events, volunteer opportunities,
right.
The main points of your sermon, links to where people can find out more information, etc. So they have some
that's
templates.
That's really an intriguing idea. It's like you're creating kind of a custom webpage, and that's one thing that I usually encourage congregations to think about when they're doing their website is kind of be event-based. So don't be institution-based, you know, kind of the name, rank, and serial number kind of website, but focus on the events. And a church service or worship service every Sunday is an event. And creating a specific website, quote-unquote, bulletin for. It sounds like an awesome idea if it can be made easy enough where it's not going to take you 10 hours to put it together. It looks, this looks pretty drag and drop and user friendly.
Yep. All right. Then a couple of things from Pastor Emil Burgess. First, he linked us to scripturetyper.com. And it's called, it's a mobile app, but also works at scripturetyper.com. So you can get access to it from mobile devices or online. And it is a Bible memory app. And Emil gave it very good review. He said he plans to recommend this to his confirmation classes and his congregation at large. And I'm sorry to say I haven't had time to dig very deep, but I will definitely look at into scripturetyper.com and how it works across all those devices. They've got an overview video and links to their mobile apps right here on the website. So check
obviously
it out.
One of the key questions is, you know, available translation. So if you're teaching your confirmation class on a certain translation, you want to be consistent with that. So I haven't looked at it either, but I've definitely got that on my list for this week.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, also from Pastor Burgess, he wrote to our Google group, our Wells Tech Google group, to ask a question about different options for digital displays. If anyone has recommendations, they want to add to digital displays to post announcements and that kind of thing, maybe media, ministry media in their narthex. And so he's looking for recommended models, best practices, connecting to a computer or a standalone display with a USB stick, whatever it is that, that folks are doing out there. So you can join the conversation on the Wells Tech Google group, and it's easy to do. You just head over to the link we provide in the show note or in, on the website and join the group, and then you can email simply wellstech@groups.wells.net. Pastor Burgess was in the group, but he had forgotten the email address, and since we just made that change recently, I thought it was worth mentioning how that group works.
Yeah, and we did bring over, I just noticed there on the page as you were showing it, we did bring over all the old conversations from, I don't know how many years old the Wells Tech listserv is, but we've got 620 topics, it shows there. So it is a very active community, and we would encourage you to take advantage of that.
Definitely.
That's it for community feedback.
Yep, that's going to do it.
WellsTech.wells.net is the place to go if you want to connect with us. We have all kinds of social networking avenues to get word to us, whether that's a comment, question, suggestion. Send us an old-fashioned email, wellstech@wells.net. And be sure to tune in next week, because we'll continue our conversation of self-publishing, and we'll get into not just the creation of the book itself, but how do you get it in the hands of other people? How do you sell it? How do you make it available? What about Kindle versions? Those kinds of things. We hope to be able to kick the tires on that for you and give you some firsthand experience. Thank you so much, Sally, for joining me as usual, and thank you to our listeners as well. Please invite your friends, family members, whoever else that might be interested in using technology to spread the gospel. That's why we're here. Thanks for joining. We will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.